So let's just start, I guess, by telling me a little bit about yourself, your background, your education, how long you've been in the Marines, anything like that.
Sure, no problem. I'll start. I was born in Lowell, Massachusetts in 1978, and then when I around the age of six, my parents bought a house in Townsend right off of Fitchburg mm-hmm. Road. My mother worked at Playmore Preschool. My dad worked at Andover at Raytheon. And I lived in Townsend from the time I was six and a half until the junior year in high school at North Middlesex. I was a member of the class in 1996. But unfortunately, you know, my mom passed away, and we ended up moving back in with my grandparents in Chelmsford. So I spent my senior year in high school in Chelmsford High and graduated from there. But I always consider Townsend to be my home. I enlisted in the Marine Corps right out of high school, and I've been in ever since, approaching the 18-year mark next month.
Wow. 18 years, you said?
Yes, both enlisted and as an officer. I went to recruit training in August of 1996 and did a four-year tour as an enlisted Marine at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And then I applied for and was accepted for a commissioning program. And the Marine Corps sent me to Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia for a period of 4 years to get my degree. And I graduated in 2003 and was commissioned as a second lieutenant. And I went to 6 months of the basic school and then 3 months of an infantry officer course. And I was assigned back at Camp Lejeune as a rifle platoon commander and then as a company commander with 1st Battalion, 8th Marines.
Okay.
After that, in 2007, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
After that, in 2007, I was assigned as an instructor at the basic school for officers in Quantico for almost a year, and then I was reassigned as an instructor at the infantry officer course for 2 years in Quantico. After that, I was sent to the Expeditionary Warfare School for a period of 9 months in Quantico, and then I was assigned as a company commander with Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 8th Marine, or 6th Marine, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And we deployed here to Afghanistan from July of 2011 until February 2012.
Until what month, 2012?
February.
Okay.
We got home from that deployment. I became the operations officer for 1st Battalion, 6th Marines, until February of 2013. And then I was chosen to join my current position as a Security Force Assistance Advisor for the Afghan National Army. And we did a 7-month pre-deployment training package where we learned all about the Afghan culture and learned how to speak the language and did several courses on how to be an advisor. And then we deployed back here to Afghanistan from October 2013 until here in May 2014.
Great. So tell me a little bit about what you've been doing on this deployment and what your goal has been.
Well, as you know, the military has been involved in Afghanistan since September 11th in 2001, and specifically the Marine Corps became involved after their operations started to wind down in Iraq in 2009. And so the Marine Corps deployed in force here to Helmand Province in early 2009, and our job was to not only stop the momentum of Taliban forces that were adding instability to a country and in the entire region, but also to prevent a safe haven for al-Qaeda in the region, specifically for Afghanistan. And so Helmand Province historically has been one of the most unstable and violent areas in the country, and there's a myriad of reasons for that we can get into if you're interested. But initially, Initially, Marine forces were required to take the lead and do the majority of the fighting to bring stability back to the Afghan hands, specifically to re-empower the government of Afghanistan and to bring Afghan security forces back into the region. Once we were able to achieve that, by 2011, the transition really started to happen to where Marine forces started to reduce their size and Afghan forces started to increase. And so the final part of the plan was to return members of that Marine force who had experience doing active military operations here to come back in as advisors, and very similar to a management consultant firm would do, very similar to what a leadership professor at a university would do, very similar to what a teacher or coach, any analogy that you can use. And so my job was to come in and basically embed with the Afghan brigade staff. That's the equivalent of an American regiment. So you have a brigadier general in charge, and you have roughly 3,000 to 5,000 Afghan soldiers, depending on the size of the unit. And my job was to establish rapport with the chief of staff and meet with him daily, attend all of his meetings, become friendly with him to the point where we shared meals together, that we'd watch TV together, that we would read the same books and have book discussions together, all in an effort for me to be a mentor to him, to share, my experience and my perspective in case it benefited him, and ultimately to be that confidant as he was increasing his confidence and increasing his effectiveness as the chief of staff for an Afghan brigade. Mm-hmm. And so luckily for me, my counterpart, Colonel Nishat was his name, he was a graduate of the U.S. Army Command and Staff College. He had come to the United States for several years. And I had the opportunity on this deployment to learn far more than I taught. Very, very experienced soldier, a wealth of knowledge, and just a great human being.
Great. Where did you say he trained?
He's been in the Afghan National Army for almost 30 mm-hmm. years now. Originally served before the Soviet Union invaded in 1979, and then while they were there for 10 years, he did more of a contracting role. But then he rejoined the Afghan National Army in 2001 with the assistance of the United States and the international security forces that were in country at the time. And he was chosen, I think, in 2006 for a special program to where he would study English at Lackland Air Force Base in Louisiana for a year. And then he was given the opportunity to go to the Army Command and Staff College in Fort Leavenworth, Missouri.
Right. Do you mind spelling his name for me?
Yes. It's he's a colonel. And his first name is Abdul, which is A-B-D-U-L.
Mm-hmm.
His middle name is Hai, which is H-A-I.
Mm-hmm.
And his last name is Nishat, which is N-E-S-H-A-T.
Okay, great. Thank you. So you said you were able to learn far more than you taught. While working with him, what sorts of things did you learn from working with him?
I learned a lot about the Afghan culture, which was very similar to, when I was raised in Massachusetts. My grandparents were French Canadians from Quebec, and so there were a lot of similarities between how the Afghans, specifically how Colonel Nishat, dealt with people and communicated with people. The sense of honor, the sense of pride, the sense of respecting your elders, it kind of came full circle to me. And I understood, at a higher level dynamic, how a staff operated and how an individual chief of staff could communicate with the members of his team and ensure that the commanding general's intent was met. And also how to communicate with the Minister of Defense and with the President of Afghanistan if need be. And so it's up until that point in time, my experience had culminated at a battalion level, which is only 1,600 Marines. And so this is the next step in the echelon for me in my experience to go up to a regimental commander level. But honestly, I learned how the other side of the world views things. You know, I learned how an Afghan sees history and what examples he uses to interpret, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, and what people's motives are. And so it was an education, you know, above and beyond what you could normally get at a university, coming from a man who not only lived through the king of Afghanistan's time, but also, you know, the invasion of the Soviet Union, the instability of the Taliban movement, and then, you know, the events that happened after September 11th. It was pretty humbling to hear his personal story, and to hear how he was able to raise a family and become a professional in the Afghan National Army over the period of 3 decades. And it was fascinating stuff.
Great. So where do things stand there now in terms of the American presence? The email I got said that you're one of the last Marines to be leaving this area. Is that true?
Yes, that is true. The Marines are all consolidated now to our base here at Camp Leatherneck. We'll remain in an advising capacity at the Corps level, which is the equivalent of a division, which is 4 brigades worth of soldiers. So if a brigade is from 3,000 to 5,000, the Corps level is in charge of upwards of 10,000 soldiers and all the supplies and vehicles and equipment that go along with that. And so we officially, under the ISAF commander, are maintaining a significant hold and in advising and recommendations and ensuring the success of the region until later on this summer. But then officially the transfer of lead security will occur in July, in the August timeframe, to where the Afghans will be completely independent at all levels. Right now they're independent from the lowest level all the way up to the brigade levels, and my advisor team was the last one at the brigade level advising a one-star general. And now that we've pulled back here to Camp Leatherneck, the only advisor team now is at a two-star level general for those institutional developmental things, like the long-term plans and the entry-level schools and the follow-on schools and a lot of the strategy. And honestly, that's where we're at in the campaign here in Operation Enduring Freedom, putting the finishing touches on a very successful operation.
Okay. So does that mean you'll actually be leaving Afghanistan altogether in the July-August timeframe, or will we still have a presence there after that point?
That decision hasn't been made yet. I know that the Marine Corps' marching orders right now are to maintain a presence until December of 2014. But whether or not U.S. forces remain after that time, or, you know, and what number that would be is still being talked through and talked about from President Obama to, you know, President Karzai here in Afghanistan.
Right. So that July-August deadline, that's to have the Afghanistan forces take over completely?
Yes, they are in the lead right now, and they are operating independently, but we call it the transfer of lead security responsibility. And so, you know, it's almost like the best analogy I can use is driver's education. When you first have a young teenager behind the wheel, the driver's ed instructor is very hands-on. He's telling them about hand placement. He's reminding the student about all the rules of the road and what the signs mean and stuff. But towards the end of that education, right before the individual tests for his license, that last couple of road miles, the student is driving and doing all the things, and rarely does the driver's ed instructor have to chime in. But if something were to happen and the driver wrecked a car or got into an accident, the in the police would hold the driver's ed instructor responsible. And that's kind of how we have it set up right now, is although the Afghans are completely independent, they're managing their own operations, they're doing their own medical care, medical evacuations, they're doing their own reports and tasking, we have a small footprint here with a one-star commanding general that ultimately is still responsible to the commander of ISAF for anything that goes right and anything that goes wrong. But that responsibility transitions this summer to the Afghans.
Right.
If that makes sense. They become officially licensed in July.
Okay. So do you have any idea what your role will be after that point? You said right now your orders are to stay there until December. Any idea what kind of role you'll be playing after that August transition?
Yes, it's the same role that we've been in doing for the past year, that the Afghans have been in the lead, that have been doing 99% of the operations and 98% of the planning and the communications on those operations. We're in that teacher and mentor capacity if they need us. And honestly, at this point, they don't need us for very much. A lot of it is over the past 13 years, we've become very, very close with the Afghan National Army, with the soldiers. It's gone well beyond just a sheer advising capacity now, to the point where we consider ourselves all members of the same warrior family. And so a lot of what we do is just maintain that rapport, check on them each and every day, make sure everything's okay, and see if they need us to help them with anything. But at this point, sometimes we get in the way even by checking on them, because they're running at 100 miles an hour, and they're doing it and doing a great job, as evidenced by the election here in April of 2014. And so we've worked ourselves out of a job, but on paper and on the schedule, we're still here just in case they need us.
Mm-hmm. Great. Tell me a little bit about the changes you've seen since you first got to Afghanistan.
When I first got here in 2011, Marine Infantry Battalions had recently just deployed into the northern Helmand region, into the Sangin district, into the Musa Kala district, and into the Kajaki districts. We had just deployed there in 2010 after several years of British forces operating in the area. So when I arrived in July of 2011, the situation was very unstable. It was very dangerous. There were explosions and IEDs and rocket-propelled grenades and machine gun fire pretty much every minute of every day. We lost a lot of outstanding, young Americans in the Marine Corps, a lot of which were wounded by improvised explosive devices, and had amputated limbs, and had traumatic brain injuries from that level of kinetics. And to see it as bad as it was in the summer of 2011, to see what it has become in May of 2014 is just absolutely unbelievable. I had some historical bias of how dangerous things were in that region. And so in the back of my mind, there was a little voice saying, driving from my base at Fob Nolé in Sangin back to Camp Leatherneck, which was 100 kilometers, roughly 62 miles distance on the road, was going to be the most dangerous thing that I've done in the military up until this point. And I've deployed multiple times, not just to Afghanistan, but that's secretly what I thought in the back of my head. But it was the most peaceful, the quietest, and the safest drive I've ever taken in 18 years in the military. Absolutely nothing out of the ordinary happened. Not even a bird chirped as we drove down the road. And all I did, every couple hundred meters was wave to an Afghan police officer or an Afghan soldier that was providing security the whole way for us, as a way to say, thanks for everything, you guys are doing good. And their wave back was, hey, thank you, and we've got it. It I didn't think that was possible, only in a couple of years. But it was, and it is right here.
Great. I wanted to ask you just a little bit more about your Townsend connection. You mentioned that you still consider it, you know, your hometown. Do you see yourself ever going back there in the future when you're out of the Marines?
I'm not sure. I may to visit. Most of my family has moved on. Then the closest family that I do have are in Chelmsford, Massachusetts, and up in New Hampshire. But I will definitely go back to see, you know, the friends that I made from age 7 up until my junior year in high school. Some of the best friends, you know, that I have in my life. And even though they don't live in Townsend, they're still pretty local. And when I do come home, you know, we always go to North Middlesex and reminisce on our days under Sandy Ruggles and the football team, and we'll go to the Townsend house, and you know, we'll eat at the McDonald's. Just because I remember how exciting I was when they opened the doors, and you know, there was a long line for everybody to get their breakfast sandwich. And and so there's a lot of memories there that I'll certainly reminisce on and keep coming back to. But I married a Southern woman when I was a student at Virginia Tech, and so to drag her up to Massachusetts may be a bridge too far, but we will certainly visit for vacations, and I'll show my kids where I grew up.
Great. Where does your family live now?
We're based out of Camp Lejeune in North Carolina.
Okay.
It's right on the coast in Jacksonville. So my wife and my children, we actually moved them back to her hometown in southwestern Virginia for this deployment, so they could be closer to friends and family. But officially, we're based out of Camp Lejeune in Jacksonville, North Carolina.
Okay. How many kids do you have?
I've got 3 children. My oldest, Madison, my daughter, she's 12. And I've got 2 sons that are 8 and 6.
Great. All right. I think those are all my questions. Is there anything else I missed that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I absolutely have to call attention to the amount of support and love that we get out here. You know, you hear sometimes in the news media, especially reading in the paper, that no one cares about Afghanistan and no one cares about the different wars that are going on. That couldn't be further from the truth. I've been absolutely inundated with letters and care packages from Massachusetts, from members of the North Middlesex community, from families that I grew up with, and from, you know, the Cape Cod Cares, and from all the different sheriffs in Barnstable and all the different Massachusetts state police officers throughout the community. Just absolutely inundated us with everything from cigarettes to coffee to candy to, you know, cards. And I don't think we could have done it without them, and we certainly wouldn't want to. I mean, as service members and especially as U.S. Marines, we strive to represent the very best of American values and character, and the love and support that we get from the American people reinforces that drive each and every day and makes us passionate about what we do, and we're forever indebted to the American people.
Great. Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, likewise.
I really
no problem.
Appreciate it. All right. Well, thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Take care.